E-Team is going to come. Are you going to come as separate people, or are you going to come as a as le- the two legs of E-Team?
I think there's a two-headed... two-headed phenomenon.
A two-headed phenomenon. Does that mean you're going to bring your two heads here at once?
If you can, catch your two at once.
Well, if you if you want to do this, I've only filmed one other two-headed monster. And that was these, this couple. They said, absolutely, we have no existence separate from each other. And they and so they put their heads close together. And I, but they did this thing that I don't think I'm going to get from you, is they wove each other's sentences, and they it's like it almost it was the same person speaking. It was quite eerie, actually.
You're not as in symbiotic now.
If you look at RDS online, you'll see the, it's quite amusing. Yeah.
You guys don't answer each other's finish each other's sentences.
No, we question each other more than we think
that. And you need the time while someone else is talking, the other one can thinking. They're kind of like slow. Yeah. So
oh,
it's
that's
like
a give a little relief. It's like a relay race.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, right. Should have the Olympics.
Yeah.
Of dual talking. So come forward
so
here, and
forward.
we will exploit you. We've decided to exploit you.
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah. So.
Can you get it both in there?
A little closer. A little closer. So.
More. Over
you can bring your chair a little. Is that closer to your chair?
To my lap.
No.
Okay.
No.
We should have a lover's love seat. We need a love seat for this picture.
Yeah, that's good.
This is fantastic. Yeah. So,
who's speaking?
Who's number one and who's number two? Who's frick and who's frack?
Yeah. See, that's how it starts. Yeah, there's no number one right
now. Let's have a domestic quarrel for in the place of what art is. I think that'll tell us a lot about what art is, actually. We have a priority discussion. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you have to say your names, and you can say them any order you like, because the good people listening to this and my video camera have not yet learned your names.
We are the E-Team together, and my name is Franziska Lamprecht.
Yeah. And my name is Hayo Mordreger.
Okay, say them again.
Franziska Lamprecht.
And Hayo Mordreger.
Okay, maybe you should spell those for our audience, because that's they're quite neat little sounds you're uttering as your identity there, but to the unfamiliar ears of, you know, some people out there.
Okay, I'll try. Franziska is FranziskA.
See right there, you got that Z in there. We had to get that Z in there. Go ahead.
Okay. And my last name, Lamprecht, is Lamprecht.
That helps, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
With mine it's a little more difficult because mine is spelled different than it's pronounced. So the spelling is Hayo. It's H-A-J-O-E, but you pronounce it like Ohio, and except you're skipping the O. And the last name is Mordreger. That's M-O-D-E-R-E-G-G-E-R, and that's like the Schwarzenegger, the same origin of the word. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so it's a good thing you call yourselves E-Team.
That was the idea. You got it.
And how did you come up with E-Team, besides being a team with possible electronic implications? Because you're so electric.
Right, that came after.
It started as a piece we did in an elevator, and at that time we thought we should give our group a name, and so we thought like, oh, we're doing something in an elevator, let's call ourselves the E-Team.
Uh-huh. Were you doing something legal?
Mm-hmm. It was completely legal, and... Uh-huh.
We didn't know. We were invited, so we were hoping someone else would cover the legality of that.
Right.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, we won't talk about what you were actually doing, but the fact that you were in the elevator produced this extraordinary name, E-Team, right?
And then you were stuck with it. Right. Yeah, so.
But then we figured, like, many more words than elevator start with an E, and we thought, like, oh, it could also be empty or enemy or...
Emergency. Easy, electronic,
That was it, right?
Yeah.
Are there more words that start with an E?
Oh, there are lots. There are lots. but you weren't thinking about email, for instance, right? as the model?
No, I don't think we sort of email.
Because that's the first thing that comes to mind these days, because email, you know, all of the combinations, the E combinations that are before words, you
right.
know, the E notes, E, you know, whatever it might be, there are hundreds now of E words.
I think for us it was more, the eBay was actually more relevant than the email.
Uh-huh.
The E of this particular word. So.
Well, eBay is the same model, though.
Yeah.
So it is electronic, actually.
It turned into that. The origin is like really like pure basic analog movement, and then it turned into digital, you know.
I see. I
world,
right.
So.
Right. This happens everywhere. It's hard to find an honest analog anymore.
That's true. Even me gave up on that, right?
Right. If Democritus existed now, he would go around with a lantern looking for an honest analog. So is your art electronic in particular?
Some of it is.
Yeah, I think we try to, if it isn't, we try to force it into it, or if it's like 50%, I think it's our work is electronic.
Right.
And we embrace it, and it's part of, you know, of our world, so we just feel it's natural. It's not something that we feel like, oh, this, we are electronic artists. It just, yeah, it just has to be in there, yeah.
Right. So that wasn't what you were thinking, that you weren't thinking about foregrounding yourself, because people would think of hearing E-Team possibly that your art is highly electronic.
I'm not so sure, because if you, for example, go on Google and you Google the word E-Team, it's actually fun, because many, many teams come up.
Oh, really?
Many E-Teams there. I think there are like 1,000 E-Teams out there, many of them with group pictures. And how do you call the people who ride on horses?
Equestrians.
Equestrians. There are lots of equestrians teams that call themselves E-Team.
Oh.
Or evangelical teams.
And then this is the other one, the evangelical. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So not all the E's, maybe in the art world, the E points towards electronic.
But it has changed too. I remember like when we first, like around 2000, 2001, 2002, that name was much more associated with like electronic e-commerce teams and things like that. So back then when we Googled, like there was a lot of competition with electronic teams, and now it shifted towards this like more, I don't know what, traditional, or the, you know, the .com crashed and the E-Teams disappeared, but we survived it. Yeah, you were still E-ing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. So let's talk about how did this happen? I mean, what kind of artists are you separately, if I can separate you in intellectually for a moment? Have you got different backgrounds or similar backgrounds or?
I think we have different backgrounds, as everyone has a different background.
Right.
But we met in Weimar at the now called Bauhaus University, where we both went to school to study fine arts. And since then, I think since 1998, we are kind of like working together or collaborating.
When did E-Team get formed? What year?
I think this was in 2000. And we just had gotten to the United States. And the elevator piece was in the Bronx Museum. And it was our first official invitation to do something.
Oh, I see.
And in a way, therefore it's nice that we kind of like kept the name, even so sometimes we think it's a... not the greatest name someone can come up with.
I see. Right. Well, what is your background? Start with you.
My background?
Mm-hmm. In art, say. Not art, but whatever.
When do you start defining something as a background?
I mean, when did you start making art? Oh. Or thinking of yourself as an artist?
That's a good story.
Yeah, it's funny because I just told the story yesterday to a few friends. That I think at a very early age I knew I wanted to be an artist. And at some point I knew that I had to prepare a portfolio to go to art school, to show it, to apply at art school. And so I prepared my portfolio, and then I went to this one art school that was in East Germany. It's called Burgi Wichtenstein in Halle. When I was 13 and I tried to do the test, but they said, like, as long as I don't have an ID, I cannot do the test. So I came back the next year and I don't know, like, I failed the test, basically, and they wrote me a rejection letter and said, like, well, you're very talented, but we think you're a little bit too young, and why don't you come back next year or in 2 years, and then everything will work out. And I was pissed about that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I thought, well, if they don't take me now, then never. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I never went back there.
Oh, yeah. Well, that shows them. And how about you? What is your background?
My background is, I know, it's not, I wasn't as determined as Francisco was. I was more, starting in high school with a friend doing performance, and then probably coming more from like a punk side of, you know, of music, art, and live performance, and, you know, doing, performed at events, you know, being naked, you know, yelling, screaming, you know, all that stuff. And then went to art school fairly late because I always refused. I thought, like, this is like academic. I'm not, art's not about academia.
Mm.
But then honestly, after I finished we finished school together, I was pretty thankful for what I learned there. Uh-huh. And I thought, like, that was pretty ignorant of me before that. So, but that's my background in art, yeah.
Uh-huh, I see. So basically you were causing chaos and then in the world.
Before. And then I remember that when I got accepted to this art school where Francie was already, you know, attending, she told me that someone told her, like, oh, there is this, like, crazy artist coming, and he does all these performances where he's naked and all that. And I completely gave up on all of that, like, during my art years. And, like, I don't know, I it's strange. I felt like sometimes really, like, looking, I saw, like, why is that so that, you know, once I go to school, everything else is different, you know? Like, you know, you're working, you're living in a different environment. I mean, apart from that, I grew up in a large industrial city, and then the place where I went both to school, to in Weimar, is like this small town German village which just lives off of its past, because Bauhaus, Nietzsche, Goethe, big Goethe play, like, you know, all this, like, load in history which is not about about contemporary art, you know?
No, so, right, not at all. Yeah. What industrial city did you grow up in?
Mannheim.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. So both of you have German as your first language, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. And your English you learned in Germany before you came here, obviously, or?
I learned it here.
Oh yeah?
Most of it, yeah.
Well, you're doing pretty well there. So we won't ask you any trick questions.
All right, thank you.
If not, you just answer in German.
Right. So have you thought individually or collectively about what art is?
No.
That's good. So we're in virgin territory here.
All right.
So we're gonna give you the opportunity to find out what you think.
Okay. I think we tried that before.
I mean, that's one of the gifts of speech, is it tells us what we think.
Yeah, right.
Oh. But I asked you last time, and if we should prepare, and you said, well, some people prepare, some people don't prepare. So we thought, like, well, maybe we are part of the group who doesn't prepare.
And you believe me.
Yes, I did. I hope you're not the only one.
I'm afraid you're the only one. Everybody else had these really great crafted answers that are perfect for the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah. I just heard that from Brian, that he had prepared, you know, his performance.
So yeah, but it was, like, don't worry, Encyclopedia Britannica would not print it.
But I'm kind of like looking over to Tom, who has access to, you know, the internet, and if he cannot come up with an answer, maybe he just can Google one.
Yeah. That's right, exactly, right. Yeah, unfair advantage,
yeah.
Cheating. Yeah, right. So let's make something up then. Let's talk about what you think art does, or what it is, or what does it do for you?
What it does for me?
Yeah.
I guess, to me, it's a part of daily... I think it's part of my, or it has almost to be part of my daily life in order to make it livable.
Oh. To make your daily life livable?
Yeah.
Ah, so it's a survival mechanism.
Yeah, up to a certain point, I think, yeah, it is.
It is, right. What, maybe we should know a little bit more about what you do as artists.
We are collaborating, and the last projects we've been working on were based on pieces of land that we bought sight unseen on eBay.
Oh.
And they were remote pieces of land because these are the most affordable ones.
Right.
So we have worked with land in Utah and in Nevada and most recently in Germany.
In Second Life.
And then we bought some land in Second Life.
I see.
And we kind of like used this piece of land as our canvas, as kind of like a starting point to develop an idea that is basically based around this piece of land on some certain level.
I see. And what kind of construction did you do on this canvas?
Construction is always immaterial. It's never we never really change the ground or do something physical. So it's always concept driven. And it's in order to realize the ideas, we kind of like engage with people that we call our neighbors that are theoretically and after a while practically our neighbors. People
They're neighbors as soon as we buy the land.
Exactly. So people that own properties around the property we bought are our neighbors, and with them we are collaborating to make a belief system, I don't know, maybe visible, not visible, but believable.
Oh, this is fascinating.
Even so you don't know what I'm talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. I mean, that's what's fascinating about it, is that you keep talking and I know less and less.
I don't know, you take over, maybe you can bring some sense to it.
I mean, you're an artist after my own heart. I want people to see art is and leave knowing less about art than when they came in, or you know.
Right.
So
yeah, good.
So I believe in art that takes away knowledge. I think removes knowledge, because otherwise it just obstructs, doesn't it?
Yeah, isn't there sometimes too much knowledge in art or surrounding art?
Really? Yeah. Right. So what do you think about art?
What I think about art, it's kind of hard to follow up on. Fun is that. I think to me it's what I'm interested in is like something that's changing, like either it's changing for me, it's either a challenge that's changing how I see certain things, it's a challenge that I, you know, that I have to overcome, so it's changing what I learned, what I know, but it's also something that I feel like, because we work a lot with people, so it's a lot about like the change of the place. Can we change the place of it just being an empty piece of desert, it being seen as something else, and if there are people around that and they confirm that they all of a sudden they see something else in there, that's a change I'm totally interested in. And it's also the change of like, you know, like screwing someone's mind, you know, in a way. I mean, what you just say, you know, about like taking knowledge away, it's really like, you know, no, you can't take this as a given. Like all of a sudden, like this is the whole, like your whole experience about reality is like questioned. And that I find very interesting, exciting. And that I find what art, you know, I don't want to say that's what art is, but that's what I personally drives me,
So what do you think art is that it accommodates strange ideas like yours?
Yeah, I think it's a certain freedom, because art is so undefined as what it is or what it can be, that you can, I mean, this is pretty banal, but you can declare pretty much everything as art. And I think in the end, it really depends on how you frame certain things and how you define certain things to say that is or isn't art. So someone might say that isn't art, but then, you know, I can say, oh, what you just did is art, or vice versa, you know. So I think it's that's what I find fascinating about it, and what I think is like the reason why we are artists, because it allows us to do certain things which you otherwise wouldn't be able to do. Maybe design sometimes can work in a very similar way, even so that's more driven by like a client and a, how do you say that, a client and a
practical
Yeah, practical, or something that's more like a for hire job, you know. And I think that's interesting to look at art like historically, because that's what it always was. You know, there wasn't, it was never ever the artist who was just working, you know, for storage like we do now, you know. So it's not that we know exactly, oh, we're going to produce this because this person asked us to do that and that and that thing. I mean, that still happens as a commission, but rarely ever happens. And for us, most of the time, these things fail. If someone asks us, oh, could you do this and this and this piece for us? And then we propose something and it's a complete failure. Whereas if we step forward and first produce our work, then someone gets excited about it, you know, because it's all then it's feasible, what didn't seem feasible before. And that, I think in a way that is what art allows us to do.
Yeah, I think the impractical part of it is kind of like the fascinating thing, that is this thing that no one, so to say, needs.
And yet you pose for yourselves situations that require a certain degree of practical orientation, like got to buy the land, got to get there, got to know the people around, make the situation work on a social level at least, so that people aren't burning crosses on your lawn. And they accept you to some extent into the community, I assume. Right?
I mean, that for us, I think it's also important that we feel like, oh, it seems so simple, you know, the way either we explain it or how it looks like, that it's like, oh yeah, right, that's, yeah,
that's
sure.
That's actually like the really good art pieces we never had to explain to the people we were working with. It was, once we said like, oh, we would like to do an international airport here. And that was all the explanation we gave. And from there, a whole universe developed. But it was just something that fitted into the moment, into the, towards, like that went along with the place
and the people present at that moment
That moment. And so Haya has a daughter, she's now 20, and we always did the test, do this and that, and if she would say, oh, I don't know, then it usually wasn't a it usually was a sign that it was too complicated.
She's the canary in the mine.
Right. Sense of your alarm.
Yeah, fantastic. What do you do with the property when you're done with the artwork?
Not always the same thing. Different, had different, like the first one we auctioned off as like an experiment in like what happens if we do something with the property itself, with the land. Does it value, does its value changes? So is it becoming an artwork itself, or is it still like a piece of land because nothing has changed on its surface? You know? So we had an auction happening in New York at the place where we had the show. And then in the run-up to the auction, we were asked, like, what do you want? Do you want an art auctioneer, or do you want someone else? And us, as we are, thinking like, okay, we're rather interested in not giving it a predetermined value, like an art auctioneer obviously makes it an art object, because that's what they auction off. So we rather went for a liquidator, and someone who auctions off liquidation items, and we had seen him, and we were like, his speech and his talk, and so we hired him. And but again, then it was sold as what it was.
You lost, you lost a bit of change on that one.
I mean, we made 10% profit. So.
But he sold it as a piece of dirt, which we kind of liked. Because it's like, okay, I know what it is. This is a piece of dirt. Where can you get a piece of dirt for this amount of money? And we kind of like preferred this approach in an art context to the approach as like, this is a piece of art in an art context, of course. Obviously, financially, it doesn't make sense at all to sell a piece of
the dirt. Properties have any buildings on them?
No, just
empty. And what quantity of land?
It varies from, like, the first one we bought was an acre. So then we got 10 acres for the price of 2 acres. I mean, so that's a deal, so we'll do that. So we got 10 acres. And then we got, I don't know, the other measurements are different because Second Life has the square meter footage. So that was about 5,000 square meters, like whatever that equivalent is. And then we bought a land in Germany, which also has square meters. And I think that was also similar to the one in, about an acre, right? I think it was an acre, So in that range. So we always feel like it needs to be something that's affordable for us, something that is not like requiring a lot of money, because then, you know, it's we can afford it just to play around with it. But for us, it was really like the idea, it's something that's affordable, yet it's a piece of the earth. You know,
yeah.
It's like this strange...
Yeah.
And this was actually what drew us to start buying land, that we discovered on eBay that you can buy a piece of the earth, and the auction we came across started with $1. And it was, to us, coming from Europe, where property is treated differently than in the United States, for example, because it's, you know, it's handed down over generations, and it's not just traded on some eBay site. This was fascinating to us, that we could buy a piece of the earth online. I mean, in the end, it, I think the 1 acre cost us $500, but in comparison to paying rent for a studio in New York City, that's also like nothing.
Nothing, right, exactly, right.
So, like, we're also interested in access, obviously, like how to provide access to, you know, remote places, people that live remotely or have remote thoughts. So we're kind of like trying to,
And I think that system, just to answer your question about practicalities, because the great thing is, even so we're dealing with real estate through eBay is like so uncomplicated. It's real, like it doesn't require more than like buying like, you know, any chair or any table. You just like place a bid and you pay your money, you get a photocopy, and then you get your land registered. You don't need a public notary or anything, so.
Right. Well, it's the first time I've heard of art that might be managed by the Bureau of Land Management.
It is.
Right. So art is land management too. Yeah. I mean, I like these expanded definitions of art. Right. Right.
Art is a piece of dirt. Yes, you can call it this way too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, is art something that makes us think differently about the world or think further about the world? Tell me what you think of a notion like that, because you really didn't know what you were going to do with those places.
Mm-hmm.
You went to into a situation that, by its very concrete and practical nature, in the sense that it is something there already that you didn't determine, and you didn't know what you were in for, because it was only a concept previously, or a name on a dimension and an amount of money. So it put certain requirements upon you, a little bit like if you switch from oil paint to watercolor, you have to look at the difference of the medium.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like that, or is art something that gets us to think in a way that we could not otherwise have thought?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I think that's the whole point behind it.
Tell me about that. Say what you think about that.
I think it's like an alternative or parallel reality to what is existing. And it needs a certain either knowledge, education, state of mind to be able to experience it. Mm-hmm. And to create these situations collectively, where not only one person stands there and is able to have the experience, but a whole group of people, not even by looking at it, but by doing it, by being part of it. That's for us the art that's most successful to us, where you are part of the artwork, and part of an alternative, like of another reality, where you suddenly can see, oh, I'm not just this one person, I could also be this character or that person, or I can transform myself by just making a switch in my brain.
That puts it a little bit in the category of the virtual.
It is, yes.
Which is why you could make the leap to a virtual property situation. Interesting. Yeah. Are you? Do you feel in tune with the notion of social sculpture and voice of sense? that when you mentioned the social dimension of this, does it feel to you like social sculpture in any sense? Or?
I mean, it's a big, you know, like coming from Germany and like growing up, you know, with this like big guy, you know, hovering over every German artist like Joseph Beuys. It's hard to get away from him. But I think we look at his work, but I think there is something else he was interested in than what we are interested in. At least that's my interpretation of what he was saying. But there, for sure, there are really parallels in there, you know, because the moment you work with people who are out there, you know, or near us or neighbors, they don't usually know much about art, you know. So for them, very often, it's not about art or an art experience, you know, or it's not that they participate because it's art, but just because it provides them some other way or some other access to a different reality, or whatever incentive. Maybe it's just be a barbecue because it's fun.
But I think like people we work with don't have much knowledge about art is not really true. It's just like that they don't have a conventional art education or training of either doing things or seeing things. We were always amazed when we went to these remote places where people have already like a little bit an alternative lifestyle, that almost everyone was in some sense an artist. They did weird things,
really?
Extreme strange, like very strange things, where for example our closest neighbor, he was called Minor John, and he had pulled up out into the desert a trailer and was living on his 10 acre piece of property, and he started digging a hole. First it was because he thought we would find some gold, but after a while it was obvious that this was not the reason, and so he started sifting through the gravel, and he produced he had sifters of 10 different sizes. And then day in, day out, year after year, he dug out more of the dirt, sifted it through, and then made these kind of like patches across his 10-acre piece of property of like stones of similar size. And then he started raking them. And so he just started raking them and raking them. And it was like a, you know, like a Buddhist, like a Zen garden in a way. But when we came in and we said like, hey, we have this idea of an international airport, for him it was clear he's going to be the runway guy. He said like, oh, great, I'll do the runways. And all we did was we put him on an orange vest and he kept raking and became the runway manager of the International Airport Montello, working full time, so to say, for this airport. Now, we had given it a name. He said, like, I'm the runway manager. But he had done this already before. He had already raked since 5 years. He was raking this property.
Wow, it's incredible.
These kind of, like, experiences where you can kind of, like, just, where it comes naturally together. Because I think...
But he himself never defined him as an artist,
no.
That's what I was saying.
Right.
He never thought of himself.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Balinese do things that we call art, but they don't have a word for it either, and call themselves artists. So, yeah. So, in that sense, but it's interesting that art here is something. It's almost like a value that you assign to that person based upon your experience. That designation. That it's interesting in that way, actually. That we do tend to look a little bit for these unusual things. If we could want to find art in nature or something, or find art in the unintentional environments. Yeah,
I'm curious about that part. I think right now I'm observing like almost like a shift from what Francis just described, the action, which is like seems senseless and absurd, and so we're drawn to it because it feels so like as an artistic endeavor. It's like, okay, why are you doing this? What's your exploration here? What are you sifting? You know, and that whole task. And that whole like continuous practice in a way, you know, going through that without like a goal makes it very attractive. But then, I mean, just recently we've been to a retreat, and many of the artists started a practice which was actually like taking on a job like someone else would be doing, you know, so like farming or, you know, like, or carpeting or whatever. And so that's kind of interesting to me that all of a sudden this, like, this profession becomes a practice as an art practice. So
yeah. Was this an artist retreat? Or
yeah, it was an artist retreat, And so different artists were presenting projects, and there were a couple of them who presented their practice as now. I mean, they just started that, and the question of, like, I think some of them terminated it, said, okay, we're going to do this for a year or for 2 years, but
I like your t-shirt. The chaos of the image is beautiful. Yeah,
I put it on for the video camera. That, at least, that was my preparation for today.
Video camera is very grateful.
Good. It's my test pattern.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I can use that in the future. Yeah. Great. Well, this is wonderful. Good. Thank you. I'd like to find out more about these events, these experiments, these adventures in in the art
Good.
World.
We should have brought, like, the next, you know, the plate here to show.
Do you have a website that drives these things in more detail? Or
it's equally nice to spell out as our names, and because we chose to make up for E-Team, which is so abbreviated, we chose a very long name as our UL. It's meineigenheim.org. So it's the same thing as our last name. It's a German term. It actually defines my own home or someone's own home, and we thought it's very fitting. And we chose that name at the very beginning of us being here, and it's spelled meineigenheim.org. So if anyone can remember or follow this one,
great, great. Yeah. Well, I will definitely look this up and check it out.
Our goal is to integrate it into the German, into the English language, like kindergarten or Blitzkrieg.
Why not?
Mein Eigenheim.
Right. Okay. Absolutely. Fantastic.
Good. Great.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I now know more about what art is.
Well, no, that's not a good time.
No, as long as you don't know everything, it's good.
As you know, my premise is you can't.
Okay. Hey, thank you. It's great. Good to see you again. Yeah,